The chapters of the Gospel of John from which these readings have been taken for the past week are really quite extraordinary, the 13th to the 18th chapter. It is all of a piece. It is the great so-called farewell discourse, which has been amplified by a later editor. And it's well worth reading because it is a summary of the meditation of whoever wrote these texts as to the meaning of Jesus' life. And so we get these great themes that are not just in John, but certainly more explicit in John, that the fearlessness, to live without fear, do not be afraid, the centrality of love, and this kind of summary statement of peace. Peace not as the world gives it. What is that distinction, just to begin there? What does the world give? The world, it seems to me, gives peace in the sense that I have some great sense of satisfaction and ease with myself. I'm easy. I'm okay. I'm interiorly integrated, or I affirm myself positively, or whatever. The psychobabble of the age fills it in with any number of descriptions. But none of that, that's worldly peace. What is the peace of God is the peace that exists between us human beings when we love. And only that is the peace that Jesus talks about. There's a song that puts it very nicely, that of all people, one of the great pop singers made very popular. You're nobody till somebody loves you. You're nobody till somebody loves you. And that's precisely right. And when one knows oneself to be loved, then the relationships between people open up. Because it seems to me, the very heart of love, to be able to be open with somebody else. To be able to be open. In the words of the book of Genesis, to stand naked and unashamed with the other. And that's not worldly at all, because the world says, oh no, you just look out for number one first, you know, and then you'll be all right. And that's all you need, and all the rest of the pieces can fall where they will. And the beauty of these chapters, the 13 to 18, I recommend that you, if you get a chance today or during the week, to read through them quietly and slowly. And let them soak into you and to me. And it's in this context I'd like to talk about the pedophilia thing. A bishop in the state said it should be addressed from the pulpit. And he's right. You know. It's been addressed in the newspapers, in the magazines, it's been addressed by the Economist. It's cost the American church $2.6 billion so far. Politically, it's damaged the church. Vast numbers of people leaving the church in Austria, Germany, Ireland. One out of every three Catholics in the States have left the church within the past 10 years. What's the problem? It's not an economic problem. It's not a political problem. It is essentially a religious problem. And we don't address this, it seems to me, closely enough. I mean, there's a sense of kind of instantaneous horror at the thought of a little kid being abused. But I think we can be stopped simply at the level of horror without looking at the anatomy of the horror from the point of view of Jesus. And the horror, I think, takes two forms. First of all, there's the act of violence itself. I don't think the pedophilia thing is fundamentally a sexual thing. I think it is a matter of power, first of all. It's the violence of a person of a position in trust, superior in age, supposedly in wisdom, overpowering some person who is unable to resist that power and simply succumbs to that power and therefore lives out that sense of powerlessness in their lives, taking the form of suicide, a drug addiction, a failed relationships. But that's only one aspect, and perhaps not even the most important aspect of it. As far as we as a church are concerned, the other aspect, of course, is the failure of the hierarchy to address it. The standard response of the hierarchy is to blame somebody else. Pope, in his letter to the Church of Ireland, said it's the secularists that are doing it. Or it's the homosexuals. Cardinal Sodano and Castrillon Hoyos made this point. It's all rubbish. It's all rubbish. So what's the religious problem, though? From the point of view of the hierarchy, they reduced human beings to abstractions. Instead of treating these people as human beings, they treat them as fly specks on some great, beautiful, flawless portrait of what the church supposes itself to be. Reduce them to nothingness. It's a radical depersonalization, dehumanization. And the reflex, of course, is to say we are being damaged. We are being damaged. The church is being damaged. There have been some extraordinary statements made in this. Somebody most recently talking about this vile character, so much beloved of John Paul II, who founded the Legionaries of Christ, Marcial Maciel. Turns out he's fathered probably at least 6 children and abused any number of his seminarians. And he founded this order, but has made an enormous amount of money, which he has distributed freely among the cardinals of the Curia. It's all been documented. And somebody said, well, it's better that 8 men suffer than that millions lose their faith. Think about it. What sort of calculus produces that sort of conclusion? Or the Pope refusing, when he was Archbishop of Munich, to defrock a well-known pedophile priest. It's imprudent to do this. Again, I ask you to think and pray, what kind of calculus would lead you to describe it as imprudent? For God's sake. For God's sake. No. We failed massively. No, that's not right. The church has not failed massively. The hierarchy has failed massively. The good shepherd, huh? That's shepherding? To reduce these tens of thousands of people who've been abused to mere pawns in some kind of sick political game? Where is peace possible if you don't even have another human being to connect with? But rather, as the Murphy Report said about the church in Ireland, it is the wealth of the church and the church's reputation which must be preserved at all costs. I was really happy to see that bishop say that, because this is the only context in which this thing can really be assessed in the Eucharist, in the context of the Eucharist, where we celebrate the memory of this man who said, this is my life for you. This is my life for you. And we failed again and again and again and again. And it's not just Austria or Ireland, it's the Diocese of London, Ontario, which, if you'll remember, countersued the sales boys who were serially abused by Father Glendenning. And the diocese countersued the Sueros family for $1.3 million. What have we done? What in God's name have we done? So, if we are to be the Church of Jesus Christ, believing in this man who inspired John to talk about peace and fear-free life and love above all, then we need seriously to look at ourselves before God. Before God, not just before public opinion. It's not just a PR problem, although that's precisely the way it's treated. It is a problem of our failure as a community. And there are all kinds of reasons for this. Why has the hierarchy, as Pius XI said, grown so monstrously big while the body of the church has shrunk? But I put it to you, to myself and to you, that this is what we must be concentrating on now. Not the damage in terms of money or reputation or status, but a failure to live fearlessly, to live peacefully, to live lovingly.